Well, hello there. Welcome to a new episode of the Liberators Network podcast. I'm Christian Verwijs, and today we're going to talk about continuous improvement and organizational learning. But there are two bits of housekeeping I would like to address before we move into the actual episode. The first one is that we reached 400 patrons today, and that's incredible. Thank you so much to all those people who are supporting this show and all the other content that we create, but also the products that we create for free, like the Scrum Team Survey. We actually also got 4 new patrons since the most recent episode. I would like to thank them by naming them Sipson, Maasjade, Amy Lane, and Christopher Jones. Thank you so much for supporting us. You rock. And the final bit of housekeeping is that we updated the Scrum Team Survey this week by adding a pretty powerful and cool new feature that we have high hopes for. Up to this week, it was possible to invite your Scrum team and to ask them to rate the work of your team and its environment on a number of topics. But we now added a feature that makes it possible to also invite your stakeholders to give their perspective on the outcomes that your team is generating. And what we hope is that this will create conversations with your stakeholders about gaps. Maybe as a team, you think you're delivering a lot of valuable outcomes, but maybe your stakeholders feel differently. Or maybe your team thinks that their work is really high quality, but stakeholders are not so sure. Or maybe you're not as responsive as you want to be to your stakeholders. Ultimately, it's not about rating your team. That's not what we're asking the stakeholders to do. But create transparency around what's important for your team to improve. And what we hope is that this new feature will make it possible to start those conversations with your stakeholders, who are, in most cases, your natural allies to working with Scrum, because it will benefit them too. So they're obviously the best people to go to if you want to remove impediments. Give it a try. Go to survey.zombiescrum.org. It's all free. You don't have to pay us anything for it. And you can participate as anonymously as you want. Now, having said all that, let's move into the episode about continuous improvement. Enjoy! Very few teams start from a position where the Scrum framework works perfectly from the beginning. Like learning to play an instrument, Scrum takes practice and improvement over time. The reason for this is that Scrum is radically different from the way that teams have built products and worked with stakeholders in the past. Scrum teams usually need to improve in many different areas and overcome many different barriers in order to reach their goals of higher customer satisfaction and increased value. Overcoming these barriers challenges teams to find their own solutions. Because every team, every challenge, and indeed every context is unique, it doesn't suffice to simply copy the best practices from elsewhere and expect them to work in your environment. Instead, Scrum teams need to experiment with different approaches to find what works for them. When teams work with the Scrum framework, we've noticed that they often start from a position of relatively poor performance. But if they use feedback to continuously learn and improve, they will achieve higher levels of performance over time. For example, if every sprint retrospective results in at least one or more improvements for future sprints, the team will eventually grow. When teams focus on removing at least one barrier every sprint, either fully or partially, those small incremental improvements will accumulate to large change over time. What is continuous improvement? Continuous improvement is a form of learning that applies not only to individual teams, but also to entire organizations as a whole. In his well-known book on organizational learning, organizational theorist Chris R. Gyris defines organizational learning as a type of error detection. Learning happens when a group of people achieves an outcome they were seeking without introducing new errors. It also happens when a mismatch is detected and a solution is produced to correct it. For example, a Scrum team discovers that they frequently exceed the time box for the daily Scrum because side discussions continue creeping into the conversation. They may decide to limit their conversation to only what matters to the sprint goal. In other words, learning requires both discovering an error as well as implementing a solution for it. The Scrum framework is essentially a mechanism for detecting two types of errors. The first type are errors that the Scrum team detects in the product they are developing, which can range from bugs to incorrect assumptions about what is needed. The second type are gaps between what would be necessary to detect those errors earlier and what is actually done to detect them. These are the impediments that teams identify towards working more empirically. Focusing on these two types of errors allows teams and organizations to learn in two complementary ways, according to Argyris: single-loop learning for errors of the first type and double-loop learning for errors of the second type. Single-loop learning focuses on solving a problem within an existing system that is defined by sets of beliefs, structures, roles, procedures, and norms. In contrast, double-loop learning challenges the system itself. As an example of single-loop learning, a Scrum team might explore different techniques for estimating their product backlog for the purpose of forecasting. The Scrum team might also use double-loop learning to challenge the purpose of forecasting itself and look for other ways to satisfy the need to forecast. Another example of single-loop learning is when developers try to fix broken unit tests faster, whereas double-loop learning would see them question why their unit tests are so prone to breaking in the first place. And a final example of single-loop learning is when a product owner tries to better capture requirements on the product backlog, whereas double-loop learning might make her question the need for detailed requirements in an empirical process in the first place. Where single-loop learning improves what is possible within the current system, double-loop learning, according to Argyris, is about challenging and changing the system around it. Double-loop learning helps people change sometimes deeply held assumptions and beliefs. Although both types of learning are important for continuous improvement to happen, Argyris emphasizes double-loop learning as particularly important for non-routine, complex work where teams have to constantly challenge not only how they do their work, but also why they do it. The many changes that organizations have to go through to transition from plan-based approaches to empirical ways of working mean that organizations need to employ a high degree of double-loop learning to change underlying beliefs about risk, control, management, and professionalism. Organizations that find themselves unable to change the roles, norms, and beliefs that stand in their way will struggle to stay competitive. Unfortunately, Argyris also notes that highly trained professionals in particular often struggle to practice double-loop learning, as it involves challenging the practices and skills that have made them successful in the past. Fortunately, using the Scrum framework purposefully helps teams leverage both types of learning by creating transparency around how their work is done and by creating opportunities for inspection and adaptation. Although all Scrum events help teams to learn by inspecting and adapting, the sprint retrospective is the one that most directly reflects on how work is done. The benefits of this reflection are limited when it focuses only on finding new practices and techniques, which is single-loop learning, and doesn't involve challenging underlying beliefs, rules, norms, and systemic aspects, which is double-loop learning. Teams affected by zombie Scrum tend to limit themselves to single-loop learning, and they can't benefit from double-loop learning because their existing beliefs about management, products, how to manage people, and how to control risk remain unchallenged. Now, up to this point, we've been talking exclusively about single and double-loop learning. And while that's probably sufficient for this episode, it's good to know that there's also a third type of learning that Chris Argyris identified in his later work, and he called this triple-loop learning, which probably is not a surprise. Now, triple-loop learning sometimes confuses people because the first time you think about it, it's really abstract. But basically the idea is that triple-loop learning is about learning how to learn. And that's pretty interesting because when in your life do you actually purposefully reflect on how you learn? Even in school, where you learn many things, you usually don't learn how to learn, And that's interesting. And that's what Argyris tries to emphasize in his work. We rarely think about how we actually learn something. And questions that are related to this are, how do you know what's right? How do you know what's true? How do you make decisions about what's right? And these are all important questions to reflect on when you're trying to understand how it is that you learn, and also to improve how you learn. So if you're interested in learning and learning theories, this is definitely something to explore in more detail, in addition to single loop and double loop learning. Chris Argyris's work is a really great starting point for this. Continuous improvement or agile transformation. Many organizations begin their journeys into Scrum with an agile transformation that is focused on reducing costs, improving responsiveness, or appeasing stakeholders. Management often brings in external consultants and coaches, sends teams to training, and changes roles and structures accordingly. Like a butterfly that emerges from a caterpillar, the word transformation suggests that it is possible to transition from one state to another in a relatively short amount of time through a concerted organizational change program. So it is possible to transition from waterfall-based development to something like agile or another value-driven approach in a fairly short and usually quite well-planned approach. These transformations are rarely successful in making teams more responsive. Although high-quality research is hard to find, our Zombie Scrum survey suggests that over 70% of Scrum teams don't frequently collaborate with stakeholders, and that 60% don't frequently deliver working software. We don't know from our data if these teams are or have been involved in agile transformations, but the results don't point to huge shifts in responsiveness. It also fits with our own observations from the organizations we visited, where agile transformations have taken place. More often than not, little has actually changed in terms of responsiveness and collaboration with stakeholders. And without meaningful results, organizations quickly move to transform to the next promising trend that comes along, only to repeat the same process again. A model that helps us understand why this change is so difficult is Kurt Lewin's force field model. Lewin is one of the pioneers of group dynamics and action research, and he argues that social systems, of which organizations are just one example, exist in a state of equilibrium, where some forces drive for change on an issue, while others prevent it or block it. Forces consist of beliefs that people have, social norms about how work is done, things that are happening in the environment, or the actions that people or groups take. In any case, change happens when the forces driving for change exceed those that are restraining it. And this balance between forces fluctuates as forces grow stronger or weaker over time, or change direction altogether. So just to give you an example, if you think about a force field around Scrum, Zombie Scrum versus Healthy Scrum, some of the forces that are driving for healthy Scrum are, for example, that Scrum teams are excited about working with stakeholders, or that stakeholders are available during sprints, or that we see as an organization that cycle time is too high, and therefore management wants to lower it. But there are also restraining forces, forces that are obstacles to change. For example, the sales department maybe still requires fixed price agreements, so they keep selling projects in a more waterfall approach. Or Scrum teams can't deploy to production on their own because they need other teams or other departments for that. Or there are no experienced Scrum Masters available in the organization to help the Scrum teams. So that's just an example of the force field. Now, this model by Lewin helps us understand three important realities about organizational change. The first is that a change is never done or implemented, as any change simply regresses back to an earlier state when the forces pushing against it become stronger. And the second is that changing the status quo can be very difficult, as there are countless visible and invisible forces pushing for and against it. The third is that underlying beliefs and assumptions about how work is done are some of the most constraining forces we find in organizations. The force field model shows how important double loop learning is for challenging those beliefs, If Scrum Masters believe that they are essentially project managers with a clear responsibility for the outcome, they will continue to act in ways that disempower the ability of the development team to self-manage and continuously improve. And when people continue to see mistakes as something to avoid at all costs, it becomes impossible to create an environment where Scrum teams can learn from their mistakes without fear of punishment. The Scrum framework not only helps teams to become more responsive, it also gives them a process by which they can learn and improve over time. Some changes involve single-loop learning, where teams and organizations discover new techniques and practices to do their work. Other changes involve double-loop learning, where the purpose of the work and its governing rules are themselves questioned. Deep learning enables the forces that push towards increased agility to overcome those forces that restrain it, creating the conditions to sustain the change. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. I hope you learned something new about, well, learning, the topic of today's episode. If anything, I hope that you're going to dig into Chris Argyris's and Kurt Lewin's work in more detail. Because even though we try, it's impossible to capture the breadth and the depth of their work in just 15 minutes. If anything, Chris Argyris's work is foundational to think about learning, how organizations learn, even how individuals learn. And it's interesting to explore that in more detail. And the same goes for the work by Kurt Lewin. His model, his force field analysis model, gives us a good way to understand how change is something that's continuous. And if you want to change something, it's about increasing the strength of the forces driving for change, but also to decrease the impact of the forces that are restraining that change. It's all interesting to explore how you can apply this in your own work with your Scrum team as a Scrum Master, as a product owner, or someone who's coaching Scrum teams. Now, if you got value out of today's episode, please like it or rate it or review it on the platform that you're listening on, because ratings and reviews are a good way for other people to discover this podcast too and maybe give something of value to them as well. Also, if you like our content, our podcast, our free blog post, the tools that we create that you can use for free, please consider supporting us in our mission. You can go to patreon.com/liberators to see how you can do just that. We also have a growing community of local user groups in countries all over the world where people gather from their local area to talk about the challenges that they face as Scrum Masters, product owners, coaches, team members, and how to overcome them together. Thanks for listening. I hope to see you again for the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.